Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
No looking back, cousin, back is what's done. Tell the preacher, God got more than one son. Tell the law, my Uzi weighs a ton. I walk like a warrior, from them I won't run.
I want to see you all moving, all right? Okay. Exercise and moving can be fun. It's about dancing, it's about moving, and if you're doing this, if you all practiced and learned this video, you were working out. You could teach it to your little brothers and sisters, to your parents.
All right, welcome to the Savage Nation. One of the main stories today is that Michelle Obama has invited a street rapper to the White House under so-called the banner of the poetry night. Of course, we know rap is not poetry. We know it's illiteracy. It's below hieroglyphics. But the question is the begged question, and I don't know how else to put it. I'm trying to be polite about it. Has Michelle Obama debased the White House, or do you think she's elevated the White House, not only with her infatuation with these street rap artists, but everything else she's been doing? And that's a major league question, because paid apologists and sycophants of the Obama Politburo, of the Obama Politburo, who work for the Associated Press and other such places, tell us that Michelle Obama is the classiest first lady since Jackie Kennedy. Everybody knows that's a big lie. And I want to say this: tolerance becomes a crime at a certain point. And for me to sit here and put up with this lie makes me feel that I'm pandering to evil. I will not tolerate what is apparently a big lie. I think that Michelle Obama is debasing the White House personally. I think she has debased the presidency. And I also think that by inviting a rapper to the White House who talks about killing cops, she has insulted every officer in the United States of America. There are other stories. For example, Muslims are burning Christian churches in Egypt right now. And I'm asking you if you even read about this. The answer, of course, is no. And the reason you haven't read about it is, again, the paid apologists and sycophants in the Obama Politburo, namely those who work in the media, do not want you to know that they are partly responsible for the arising of the Muslim fanatics, mainly the Muslim Brotherhood, who are killing Coptic Christians in Egypt. And I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask it to you directly. Who do you blame the most for the killing of Christians in Egypt, other than Anderson Cooper of CNN, who I think should be thrown out of the journalist profession for having glorified these uprisings as though it was something exciting? Thirdly, Obama's pushing the Dream Act. Of course, it is a dream, if you're here illegally, to be granted amnesty so you can vote for Republicans. And so we'll be talking about those questions. The White House defends the rapper's invitation to a poetry event. Now, first of all, it's an oxymoron to call rap music a poetry. That's number one. Number two, for the first lady to glorify a man who glorifies cop killing is a really astounding to me, that police would even vote for Obama. And yet I know that many police have voted for Obama and will vote for him again, primarily because they're members of police unions who are living like fat hogs off the land, and they don't understand that their pensions are going to come to an end anyway. No matter how many times they pander to the Democrats, they're still going to lose most of their pensions within 5 to 10 years because they're unsupportable. So for them to vote against their own survival in the names of their own self-interest is a double insult to themselves. So the rapper going to the White House raises the question. Now let's talk about Michelle Obama per se. The paid apologists and sycophants of the Obama Politburo, who work for AP and such, tell us that Michelle Obama is the classiest first lady, even classier than Jackie Kennedy. And yet I don't know what this first lady has done to be called classy, But I do remember Jackie Kennedy quite well. She was quite something. I'd like to play a piece from A Blast from the Past so you could hear what a real First Lady sounds like. Listen.
These two were on loan from the Boston Museum of Fine Art. All three pictures in this room are by Healy. There's Thomas Jefferson, a copy after Stuart. And then there's Daniel Webster, who didn't live here, but he visited the White House for 40 years. And then the most famous one of all is this one of Abraham Lincoln, which traditionally always hung in the state dining room. Healy was a contemporary of Lincoln, but he only saw him once, so he painted this picture from photographs.
Now, we don't know whose paintings have been taken down under Michelle's reign. We don't know whether H. Rapp Brown's picture has been put up, or Stokely Carmichael, or Malcolm X. Maybe their portraits are hanging in the White House. We haven't any idea, but we do know that somebody has to say something at some point. You know, the Queen has no clothes. You know that one? Do you consider rap a form of poetry? I don't. Let me explain to you. I grew up reading real literature and listening to real poetry. Most of what you hear as poetry today is filth and garbage, dressed up and gussied up. It's written by illiterate morons who are using this opportunity to debase not only the United States of America, but the language itself. Listen to what real poetry is as we play for you Dylan Thomas's great poem.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good
okay.
Men, the last
beautiful.
Wave...
No, no, keep playing it. I love it.
How bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave
yeah.
Men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Yeah, he wrote that at his father's funeral. In honor of his father. Now compare that to the filth and garbage that's going to be heard in the White House, which they have the nerve to call poetry. And you wonder why so many children in this country can't read or write. You wonder why so many of them come out hating the society and hating America. You don't have to look any further than who's in the White House. Again, I say to you that at a certain point, you have to stand up to the tyranny of the big lie. You know, recently, a former Prime Minister of England, whose name I forget. He was a cohort of Bill Clinton's. I forget his name. It's almost unimportant. He was a nonentity when he was prime minister. Another liberal fraud said that looking backwards, the reason that England has been suffering so many terror attacks is because they were so PC, they were afraid to say anything about the growing militancy and hatred and violence of the Muslim population. Well, my friends, there comes a time when you have to decide which side of the line you're on. You better decide right now because you're losing your country. You better decide right now when it reaches a point like this where the White House invites a man who glorifies the killing of cops, a man who debases the English language, a man who is as literate as they come and calls him a poet. You better decide which side of the line you're standing on. There are other topics. We played you Jackie Kennedy. We compared her and contrasted her with the current First Lady in the White House so that you can have some ability to even understand what we're talking about. We're also talking about the vermin in the media, men like Anderson Cooper, who was so in love with his own image that he doesn't understand that he himself has become the enemy of freedom. That during the riots in Egypt a few months ago, He was up excited on CNN talking about the young men in tight dungarees with the Blackberries who were simply demanding freedom and the overthrow of Mubarak. And now we wake up and Christians are being killed, churches are being burned, and there's no Anderson Cooper or anyone else from the American media to tell you what is actually going on in Egypt. I told you on this show what would happen. I told you the Muslim Brotherhood would rise up. And many of you heard me. Many of you believed me. Many of you understood I saw what was coming. But unfortunately, not enough of you to have stood up to the big lie. So again, maybe you want to rename this show from the Savage Nation to Standing Up to the Big Lie. Because to me, there's a big lie coming out of this White House virtually every second. I realize that it was said back in the days of Hitler by his propaganda minister that if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. And so if Anderson Cooper keeps talking about the Arab Spring over and over again, maybe you won't know about the Christians being killed throughout the Middle East. If the White House keeps calling illiterate gutter rats poets, eventually you will start to think that illiterate gutter rats are poets. But you're not going to convince me of either. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day.
How can we follow leader when it's a corrupt one? The government's a G-unit and they might buck young.
Blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And
black people in the urban area one. I hold up a peace sign, but I carry a gun.
See, there's poetry for you. Okay, to the White House, there's no difference between the illiterate rapper they're inviting to the White House to glorify the killing of cops and Dylan Thomas if they ever read him. And that's what we're facing today under Obama. That's like comparing chicken fat to steak and calling them both poets. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I could ask you what you think about it. Do you consider rap a form of poetry? We know it isn't. We know this is a direct result of the debasement of the university system, number one, as a result of political cowardice, where they started to take rap seriously. I mean, I don't mind that people buy rap records. It's the same thing as chewing bubble gum. If you want to chew bubble gum, go ahead. Just don't do it around me because I find it disgusting. But to call rap poetry and then elevate it up to the level of poetry is an example of stupidity. That's all in a lack of education. It's not poetry. As I say, you can call anything that you wish. It doesn't make it so. That's all. So we want to talk about that. That's fine. Obama pushes the Dream Act. There's another story, but what are you going to say about that? The Muslims are burning Christian churches in Egypt. And, of course, the media is not reporting who is actually behind the so-called Arab Spring, but we did here on the Savage Nation. And so we can take the callers in order in which they've appeared. Let's start in New York on WOR. Catherine, go ahead, please. Stop talking to me like you know me. What do you have to say?
I wanted to say that I think you're being a crutch today.
Oh, get off my show, lady. Please, do me a favor. Just go gargle with Rogaine. Then we'd never have to hear from you again. Mike in Kansas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if I could. I got a couple comments to make about the whole rap guy going to the White House. First of all, I'd just like to say that, you know, the White House is supposed to stand for, you know, freedom, the basis of our country, and, you know, what our country was founded on. And when it's complete opposite to me, you have tyrants, presidents in there that throw parties, have people snuck in cars, have women going in there, sexual relations in the Oval Office, to decisions that affect the world. And now people are just like, oh, my God, I can't believe a rap guy's going to the White House. Like, if that's the worst thing that's ever happened in that office.
Yeah, but you're mixing up apples with oranges. In other words, the White House is supposed to set standards for the people, especially the children. And when you have what's called a poetry night or day in the White House and you invite someone who's clearly not a poet, but in essence an illiterate street talker, and call him a poet, what you're doing is telling the children that anything you make up in your head is wonderful and delicious. That's like smearing feces on a wall and calling it impressionist art, as opposed to fine painting. Can't you understand that?
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. No, I do agree with that, but I also agree.
All right, well, let's not argue over the rest of Bill Clinton's behaviors. Okay, one thing you know, Bush may have been an imperfect president, and I was the first to criticize him quite repeatedly on this show. But you know what? He and Laura brought dignity to the White House. Let me put it to you that way. How about the word dignified behavior? Does that work, or is that not allowed to be said anymore? You mean because your son walks around with his behind hanging out of his pants because he wears pants hanging down like he's a rapper? That's considered a norm because your stupid son walks around with his skinny white behind falling out of his pants, and you don't have the nerve to tell him to put a belt on or you'll give him a belt? That also makes it normal? You see these morons with pimples on their face marching around with pale, and that's your idea of normal dress? Because these losers wear a dress like that in a prison cell in the ghetto? That's why the country's going to hell, because you won't even stand up to your own son and tell him he looks like a big schmuck. Yes, that's right. You can do it. Tend your own garden. Tell your son he looks like a moron when he walks around like that without a belt on his pants. The schmuck. Okay, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about this? The police have nothing to say. They're busy adding up the pensions. That's all. So the man did a song where he celebrated a Black Panther was convicted of killing a New Jersey State Trooper with lyrics such as, "May God bless your soul." So the head of New Jersey State Trooper Union publicly blasted the White House's decision to include this street rapper in its so-called poetry event. And Sarah Palin weighed in against his appearance at the White House. I guess that immediately says that it's good that he goes there, because the New Jersey State Troopers and Sarah Palin are not as good as street rappers who wound up in prison. You see, this is a country that's upside down, where right is wrong, where bad is good, where illiteracy is literacy, where stupidity is intelligence, where debasement is dignity. Everything is upside down in the Obama White House. He's turned the country upside down, and I, for one, don't accept it.
Savage.
Them boy wanna talk like them wanna guan come. But what you gonna do if you got one gun? I sing a song for the hero unsung, with faces on the mirror of the revolution.
See, that's in the White House. Isn't that nice? You don't even understand what Michelle Obama is doing. Michelle Obama is blotting out reality with her debasing cultural games in and around the White House. Michelle Obama is sending missives and messages to millions of unemployed youths that it's okay to take up a gun, to take up a cause, and to overturn society. Don't you understand what game these people are playing and what dangerous radicals they really are? You don't quite get it yet because you've been hoodwinked by the media again. Number two, you're also afraid to say anything because they're both black. And number three, I'm not afraid to say it. And damn it, I'm going to say it until I'm off the air, and I'm never going to be off the air. I'll be speaking the truth to power so long as God gives me the power to do so. I am not going to be gulled by the media. I'm not going to be gulled by the White House. And I'm not going to be gulled by you, the caller, into telling me it's okay to listen to some illiterate street bum posing as a poet. It's very sickening, by the way. Is it the biggest problem on earth? No. But it is worth discussing. Why is it worth discussing? Because this is not the first affront to the sensibilities of the American people that has been conducted by Michelle Obama, the First Lady of the United States of America. She has an obligation and a duty to uphold a certain standard of decorum and behavior in the White House. And in my opinion, she doesn't make the grade. And it leads you to wonder about this woman's entire background. Just as we're questioning Barack Hussein Obama's college records, what, you forgot about that already? Because of the big victory against Osama bin Laden while he was playing basketball, and they pulled him off the court and told him to look at the screen. They got him now. The SEALs did the job. Suddenly, he's a great war hero. He's George Washington all of a sudden. Overnight, from an out-of-touch president, he's George Washington and General Patton all at once. So suddenly now everything, you went silent. You're afraid to say a word. Where are his records? Where is college records? How did he get into college? What did he write in college? You don't know? You don't want to know? I still want to know. So now let's ask about the First Lady. What are her college records like? What did she do in college? Who did she glorify in college? Don't you think you have an obligation to know who's actually inhabiting the White House? Well, you don't want to know, so you don't want to know. I can't help you. That's all there is to it. Okay, let's go on to the callers, because this isn't the only topic we're going to talk about. There are others. And now we're going to take your calls. New York, Marty, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
How do they get away with calling rap music music when there's no melody, there's no chord progression, there's no musical arrangement? This is something that has always astounded me.
Marty, that's how they get away with calling a lot of things what they are. That is how they get away with calling, I don't want to make the next statement because we're not on a live stage. It's a public radio show. Part of the hocus pocus of the Obama administration is to distort reality and to intimidate people into submission for fear that the people have a fear that they'll be called various and sundry names if they dare criticize anything he and his wife does. But let's stick to the point of rap. We know that rap is not music. We know that rap is not poetry. A rap is a form of urban language is what it is, and that's fine. But you don't elevate that to the level of Dylan Thomas, do you?
No.
Well, now you understand why there's virtually no classic art left in the country. To me, this is the bottom line. How much lower can you go than rap? Tell me, how much lower can you go than rap? Is there any way to get lower than rap?
Well, music in this country as an art form has been dead for at least 40 years.
I agree with you. I was thinking about it the other day as I was buying a shirt in Macy's, and I was listening to the piped-in, whiny chick music. And I said, whatever happened to male vocalists who sang, with a beautiful tenor voice? Where'd they go? Why are we listening to this whiny chick music everywhere throughout our society? Everywhere you turn, there's no music.
It's disgusting. And you can't get away from it. You walk into any store, and here's this crap and nonsense coming out of the speakers.
That's right. Or when they start to play bad rap music, I tell them, if you don't turn it off, I'm not going to eat in this restaurant. What I found out is a lot of restaurants are playing music that the hell picks, incidentally, for their own entertainment. Either they're high on drugs and they need the music to stimulate them to keep working as waiters or busboys or whatever. And I say, hey, you know what? I'm here to pay for a dinner. I'm not going to listen to that garbage. Either turn it off or turn something else on. I'm not going to eat here. And you know what? They usually will do it. It's just that most people don't even say it. I don't even think they hear it.
Yeah.
I don't think most people even hear what's in the background anymore. I happen to have a very refined set of ears. So that's the story. The bottom line is the rapper invite is a debasement of the entire meaning of the White House. They have lowered the White House once again. Michelle Obama is lowering the status of the White House. Whether or not you like rap music is not the issue. The issue is the First Lady debasing the entire White House by doing this. That's all there is to it. Florida. Charlie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'd just like to say my hat's off to you. Thank you for standing up for what is supposed to be dignity. There's supposed to be dignity and class at the White House. Thank you for calling trash, trash.
Okay, good. You know, we hear the phrase white trash very often bandied about and people snicker at it. But, you know, it's not limited to people who have. And I will say to you that it is about dignity. And I would say to you that President Obama with his and her with her obsession with vegetable growing and children and, the rap artist, I would say that she has debased the White House. And I think I've made my point. Let's clear up these calls on this subject and we'll move on to other topics that are probably not as interesting, but probably more important. Las Vegas, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Your comments, please.
Who's this disgrace I'm disgusted with in the White House? This Michelle Obama. I mean, you're exactly right. She just lowered the standards. We're supposed to go upward, not backward. It doesn't matter what race she is. What does matter is that, yes, this rap artist, this poetic fool, invited to the White House. Let me tell you something. When he talks about a gun, is he talking about legally carrying it? Probably not. Aren't we supposed to be promoting following the law? You know, my brother.
Yeah, she is promoting to this guy's lyrics where he says, how can we follow a leader when this a corrupt one? The government's a G-Union, a Mike Buck Young. I don't even know what he's talking about. Then he goes into black people in the urban area. I hold up a peace sign, but I carry a gun. That's the message that Michelle Obama wants to send to millions of uneducated morons out there.
Yeah, this woman is a joke. She doesn't know anything about rap.
Well, she knows what she's doing. I don't think people understand that these are two revolutionaries, lifetime hardcore Marxist revolutionaries, who are much smarter than you give them credit for being. And what they're doing is sending out subliminal messages to the masses of uneducated youth out there who eventually they would like to use as a sort of Gestapo police force if they were allowed to get away with it. But don't get me started on the bigger issue of Obama, because right now he's walking around like Saint Obama, telling him that Osama bin Laden had been killed, and there's nothing you're going to do about it. The average schmuck thinks he personally supervised it. He may as well have been there. He flew in. I mean, there wasn't even a shootout. It looked to me like they just executed a bunch of unarmed old people and women and children in a safe house somewhere, which, okay, don't take it away from them. But the fact of the matter is, what was the big victory here? I don't even understand this. They must have known he was there for years. That's the real question that begs to be answered. No one's answering it. Why that night? Why all of a sudden that night did they decide to go after him when they must have known he was there for years? I would even hazard a guess that Bush knew he was there. How do you like that? I think they were happy to keep him alive in the same way that some firemen have been caught setting fires in order to justify obscene fire department budgets. I mean, there was a time when there were volunteer firemen, because nobody could afford to pay men to sit around eating bacon and eggs and to sweep up the floors. I drove past the firehouse the other day. One of them was awake and the other three were upstairs working out with weights and counting up their pension money and seeing what lawyer they could hire to make sure no one cuts into their pension. Big, fat $400,000 fire trucks that nobody ever uses. What do you need them for? You know, have one person on duty, a captain, and the rest will be all volunteer firemen in most cities of America. What do you need? Where'd this come from? And the fact of the matter is, this is throughout society, this story. So the fireman is a side issue. The whole issue is, why did they keep Osama bin Laden alive so long when they knew where he was hiding in plain sight? The answer is because they needed a boogeyman to justify the Department of Homeland Security, to justify any amount of money that Leon Panetta and the other CIA chiefs wanted, any amount of money that any so-called security agency wanted, because the boogeyman was about to get us any minute. But then something happened. We still don't know. We never will know about the exact timing of why they did it, and that they could call him in at the last second with a golf shirt so we could take a look at the television set and see what the SEALs were actually doing. Libs, Indianapolis. Darren, you're on the Savage Nation.
What is going on in Arizona? They're literally tearing this country in half. Piece by piece, liberal by liberal, vote by vote. Let's forget about this common stuff. Let's talk about the real.
Well, excuse me, I'm not following you. What is Arizona? What issue is it in Arizona that is offending you?
The fact that Arizona is being, they actually are trying to break the state in half to form a 51st state. There's a referendum out where they're trying to get 45,000 registered voters to tear the state in half because one state is too conservative. Is this really Goldwater State?
Well, that would be very good, actually. I think Arizona should be divided. I think California should be divided, by the way. I would like to see a liberal part of California and a real California. Then I'd like to compare and contrast in 5 years where it's safer to live. So I'm not against that. I think that this kind of division is actually healthy in America. I wouldn't mind seeing half America divided into two parts, a liberal America and a conservative America, and then compare in 5 years who is more solvent and which part of the new Americas is a safer place to live in. Okay, what do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Las Vegas, Michael, did we have you yet? Michael, you're on the show.
Hey, Dr. Savage. As far as I can tell, Ms. Obama can't tell the difference between a cruet and a crucible, and she probably couldn't even identify a ramekin on a fine dining table.
Did you hear the piece I played comparing her to Jackie Kennedy at the beginning of the show?
Yes. No, I know poetry and rap. I listen to I'm a 40-year-old man, so I listen to the Beastie Boys, and I listen to Run DMC, and I listen to the Fat Boys when I was a kid, and at least it was somewhat of a message, but you knew that what you were listening to was crap. And there was a big difference between that and a person like myself who was trained in, you know, classical music, where I was playing Glenn Miller Band in band class and then listening to the Beastie Boys. There's a huge difference. And when you know the difference...
Would the president of that time have invited one of the lesser artists, so-called, to the White House and held him up as a role model and a standard? Of course not.
No, I couldn't see President Reagan.
So the Obamas are, first of all, bringing us down to the lowest common denominator in America. Instead of bringing us up to a literate level of literature, poetry, whatever, they're bringing us down to what is literally subliterate. The subliterate use of language is now being glorified by Michelle Obama. And I think that that's a disgrace. And I think somebody has to say enough is enough. You know, get your act together. And why don't you study a real first lady? Take some lessons on how to be a first lady. Don't just kind of do it on the Nash because you're failing at it. You're getting an F, Michelle. If America were to grade Michelle Obama on her act as first lady, I think she'd get an F. I'll be right back.
Have a glass of wine, all right, because I'm going to sell you guys out. They were passing around a little glass, and I'm like, what's that? So please, feel free. Don't wait till I leave to get the wine.
Is this one of Abraham Lincoln, which traditionally always hung in the state dining room? Healy was a contemporary of Lincoln, but he only saw him once, so he painted this picture from photographs.
All right, boys and girls, comparing and contrasting first ladies on the Savage Nation. Plunk that magic plunker, Froggy, where you have Michelle Obama blotting out reality with her debasing cultural games and a compliant sycophantic media going along and calling her the classiest first lady, outdoing even Jackie Kennedy. I mean, enough of this surreality being put upon the American people by the vermin in the media who either know better and are lying to you or really don't know better themselves, truthfully. It's the same on the economic level. Here you have Benjamin Bernanke, the worst man in the history of this division of the government, a man who is a one-eyed cyclops, a man who looks as though he poked out one eye with a broomstick and is staring at numbers and not knowing even what he's staring at, and goes before Congress and lies to them, lies through his teeth, the American Congress, and says, we're not raising interest rates. And the reason he wants to keep interest rates at near zero is so that you don't save. And without you putting money into banks, there's no capital to go around for investment. And consequently, this is the Politburo of the ex-Soviet Union all over again, where the money supply is controlled almost entirely by the Central Committee of the Politburo, meaning the government, the communist government. You see, in order for there to be a capitalist system, you need capital. In order for there to be capital, banks need to have money. In order for there to be capital in the banks, people need to put money into savings accounts. In order to encourage people to put money into savings accounts, you need to offer them interest. And so by arbitrarily and constantly keeping interest at zero or near zero, the people don't put their money into banks. The banks have very little money to loan because there are very few loans out there. Businesses are not starting up. Businesses are not expanding. And as a result, we have the equivalent of the ex-Soviet Union's Politburo, where money is controlled out of a central government. That's exactly economics 101 from a Marxist point of view. I explain this in a different way in Trickle Up Poverty, and I explain it to you again. Now, what does it have to do with Michelle Obama inviting a revolutionary gun-toting or, gun-glorifying a rapper to the White House, a cop, a man who glorifies a cop killer into the White House, a man who is illiterate or subliterate or whichever way you want to put it, not a very literate man to the White House and calling him a poet? It has everything to do with just what I said about economic policies. It is all part of the sub rosa Marxist revolution going on right in front of your eyes, in plain sight. You're watching a sub rosa Marxist revolution occurring right in front of your eyes. Now, what do we have on the other side? Here's the great Republican Party, who had a victory handed to them on a silver platter last November. And what have they done with it ever since? Look who they're choosing to put up as a candidate. The GOPAC tick, Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich has less of a chance to win as a president than I do. I can guarantee you that if I said I'm thinking of leaving radio, I'm running an exploratory committee, I'm going to look into it, I can guarantee you I would get more of the popular vote than Newt Gingrich. Why are the Republicans running this hack, this burned out retread, this old tire? I don't know. Whatever the reasons are, he's a loser. He can't win. Who else do you have? Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is dead in the starting gate. Why? He's neutralized before he begins. Why? Because Romney Care in Massachusetts is as big a disaster as they come. And Obama, his biggest vulnerability is Obamacare. So now you have someone running on the Republican side, so-called, who is just as vulnerable on that issue. So what does Romney stand for? What does he actually stand for? He's been silent for 2 years. He took no positions on anything. He won't stand up to the radical Islamic threat to our survival. He's not here for the culture wars. So what is he there for? So you got two basic nice guys. I would say Romney's a nice guy. I'd say Newt Gingrich is something other than a nice guy. Newt Gingrich is an opportunist of the lowest order and can't win. Romney's a nice-looking guy who's got the right looks and the right sound, but he can't win either. Not right now. So who do we have to run up against Obama right now? Answer, a big fat zero. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else do you want to talk about? How about Obama pushing amnesty for millions of illegal aliens under the so-called DREAM Act? How about Muslims burning churches and killing Christians in Egypt and why the media won't cover it? And who do you think is responsible for this? Who do you think is responsible for this in complete and total blackout of what the Muslims are doing to Christians in Egypt?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Washington's lagging behind the country on this. I mean, one CEO had this to say about reform. American ingenuity is a product of the openness and diversity of this society. Immigrants have made America great as the world leader in business, in science, higher education, and innovation. You know who that leader was? Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News and is an immigrant himself. I don't know if you're familiar with Rupert Murdoch's views, but let's just say he doesn't have an Obama sticker on his car. But he agrees with me on this.
Well, now you know why Michael Savage is banned from Fox News, and now you know why I have such enmity towards the folks on Fox News who, take the party line that immigration and illegal immigration are one and the same thing, and that scientists and educated individuals are coming in from Mexico. I mean, it's absurd. Cheap labor is one thing for Rupert Murdoch because his interests are so vast and so far and wide. But when you turn on Fox News, you hear support for the passage of the DREAM Act virtually from all of the hosts. They're all in lockstep because the boss told them what to say. Good for them. They're entitled to it. But don't be fooled into thinking they're a conservative outlet. We're also talking about Michelle Obama inviting a so-called rapper to the White House and calling it poetry. A rapper, by the way, who glorifies a cop killer, glorifies revolution, and glorifies the using of guns. We're also talking about the killing of Christians and the burning of churches in Egypt and why it's being blotted out by the vermin in the media, especially those who want you to believe that the so-called Arab Spring is one of nothing but a desire for peace and freedom. 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls on these and any other topic right here on the Savage Nation. Let's begin in Montana with Anthony. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mike. What I want to say is that the subterfuge and the dissimulation that's going on, it's just, it's actually atrocious. If we think back to 2001, when Osama bin Laden, after the bombing, his statement and his threats to the United States was that he was going to bring our country down through finance. And, you know, most people have probably forgotten that or have short memories. But whether he's dead or alive, that's being done by the person in the White House who's called the son. You know, he's the son of the Egyptian president. Kunur was telling us that a while back when he filled in for you once. And
I don't understand. I don't quite understand your main point. Where are you going here with this? I don't follow you.
Whether Obama, I mean, Osama bin Laden is dead or alive, Obama is still fulfilling his desires and his threats. He's bringing our country down through destroying us.
I wouldn't blame Osama bin Laden for the demise of America's financial prowess. I wouldn't say he's the sole cause of our demise. I mean, you could argue that the government, the military-industrial complex is partly responsible for the destruction of our validity of our economy. You could argue that. But certainly don't overlook the high cost of illegal immigration in this country. The cost of social services is bankrupting virtually every state, where the hordes from Mexico in particular are sucking the states dry, both for the hospitals and the education. Let's not put that aside. Don't blame Osama bin Laden for China either, who has been manipulating their currency in order to make certain that we stay behind the eight ball. Let's not forget the fact that we have very powerful business interests who refuse to establish tariffs in this country that would quickly balance the books. Every other country on earth, with virtually no exception, has tariffs to prohibit the entry of United States goods into their country. I know a little bit about business. I'm not just speaking out of the side of my left leg here. This is the only country on earth that permits other countries to put up trade barriers and then says we believe in free trade. And that's because traders are conducting our foreign policy, not those who understand what business really is. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Charles in Indianapolis, welcome to the program. Charles, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. I just want to say that, you know, the rapper going into the White House, it's just another way to dumb down the society. Dumb it down. You know, with this rap music and all this other crap music that I call, like you call it, it's just a way to dumb down society, make them stupid.
We know all of that. There's nothing in this call because the call itself is debasing the audience. Okay, it shouldn't have been picked. Sorry. I hate to insult callers, but, you know, at a certain point, just the caller doesn't make it a good call. Let's try to get somebody who either adds to the discussion. Hear the same old words of dumbing down, please. I'll go to the next caller and see if I do any better yet. Oregon, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Savage. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to see you be the campaign manager for Alan West and Michelle Bachmann. I would like to see how the media could not acknowledge your...
Well, they would not acknowledge that Alan West is African-American. They would not acknowledge that Michelle Bachmann is a female. They would try to turn them into something from both of them being from Mars or Jupiter, as opposed to Americans, as you understand how they work. The radical left-wing media works like this. If you are a black person and you are not a left-winger, you are no longer... You lose your blackness. And this goes for every other race on earth. Unless you fulfill their agenda, you don't exist or you are a bad person. In other words, Alan West is probably our most distinguished war hero in Congress. When have you last read that in the newspaper? Michelle Bachmann is a tax attorney. When have you read that in the paper most recently? She's more qualified for the position of president than Barack Obama, who is nothing but a community organizer and a member of the American Politburo. I understand all of this, but you know, you got a big Republican machine to overcome who has the nerve to foist Romney and what's his name, Newt Gingrich upon us. It's unbelievable. I'm not going to straighten the world out myself. That's all. All you're going to do is open up a newspaper. Here's the New York Daily News. Missing 18-year-old New Jersey girl's car found. 80s one-hit wonders, where are they now? Lindsay Lohan tested positive for alcohol. Jazz musician found stuffed in trunk was stabbed to death. White House fires back after conservative pundits blast hip-hop star's visit. That's the New York Daily News pandering to the lowest of the low in New York City. So how do you expect to make any headway with a population that is this stupid? Austin, Texas. Nick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, I'm calling. Can you hear me correctly?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm calling because I'm in my early 20s, and one thing that I want to tell you is I always see people in age group, like you were saying earlier, sagging their pants like a bunch of degenerates. And also on top of that, you need to look up Google or look on YouTube a rap battle. These people rap to each other and put each other down, and then the other one takes a turn. It's complete idiocracy. It's foolish. And then for this so-called poet, is not, I mean, to even call that poet.
All right, I get it. I get it. You're outraged, but you don't have the words to express your outrage. Donner plus clair le mot de la tribu is how it was said by Mallarmé. To give more clarity to the words of the tribe, that's my job, not yours. I'll be right back.
I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn, and a king. I've been up and down and over and out.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Many cultural and political events that we are discussing, not the least of which is the murder and the burning of churches, the murder of Christians and the burning of churches in Egypt that is being blacked out by the vermin in the media. Here, for example, is the latest news headlines from your friends at the Associated Press. Rebels, Gaddafi forces pushed back from Misrata. 48 women raped every hour in Congo, study finds. Pakistani intelligence, friend or foe. Bin Laden's wife, I'll stand with you. Two quakes in Spain kill 10, injure dozens. Worldwide interest as Canada drug program in court. Romans rattled by quake rumor despite reassurances. Stones thrown near tear gas fired at Athens March. Not one word about the killing of Christians and the burning of churches. And you have to ask yourself, how could this be happening in the United States of America? We know the media is about as, let us say that the journalist profession today is the equivalent of rap. What rap is to music is what journalists are today compared to real journalists of 50 years ago. Let's start with that. In other words, to say that rap is music is to say that the writers of news stories today are journalists is about the same thing. I think that succinctly states where I'm coming from, okay? That says what I've been trying to say. I got to admit I'm a little foggy. I was off for a few days. I have a few little, you know, issues that I'm dealing with, and that's the end of it. But the fact is, I can pretty much see what's going on. You've got the Muslims killing Christians in Egypt. You've got the Muslims burning churches in Egypt. And that fraudulent piece of nothing, Anderson Cooper, who was oh so excited during the revolution that overthrew Mubarak, standing there talking about the men in dungarees and their blackberries as though this was some kind of youth rebellion, when I saw right through it from day one, I saw what was going on. I saw it, whether it was in Egypt or the surrounding nations, I saw what was coming. I tried to warn you and the rest of the world, but because the media is either on the same level as so-called rap musicians, or they're in cahoots with the so-called Muslim Brotherhood, it's hard to tell at this point what the difference is. It doesn't matter what the difference is or why they're doing it. All that matters is that the reason America is falling apart, one of the primary reasons is because we no longer have a press that acts like watchdogs. They act like the lapdogs of the Obama administration. Now the callers. Petri in Sacramento, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's happening? So listen, the baggy pants thing with these rappers that wear this ugly clothing, all these oversized pants and shirts, you guys mentioned it a couple times, and I had to point out that this whole business of them wearing these baggy pants and these oversized shirts is because these families come from, they're poor. They're poor families from the ghetto, and they don't have money to buy proper fitting clothes.
Wait. You mean they can't afford a piece of rope for a belt to keep the pants on? Are you kidding me?
Yes, that's what I think, and I think that
Are you crazy? I came from a poor family. My mother wouldn't let me out of the house if I wore pants under my behind. What are you talking about?
Well, yes.
The reason that they wear baggy pants and baggy shirts is to hide drugs and hide guns. Don't you understand that?
I'm not for that. Don't get me wrong.
What'd you go to a university in Sacramento, California, somewhere where you came up with this conclusion that they're poor, that's why they wear it? You know how expensive that garbage costs? How much that garbage that they wear costs? You think they just make it out of remnants that they find in the floor?
No. It started with...
All right, please, again, I'm getting callers today. Boy, oh, boy. As my father would say, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. He had a little sign in the store that said, don't go away, man, just go away. That's the sign I like to put up on my show today. If I could put up a sign on this radio show, it'd be don't go away, man, just go away, because I've never heard anything like it. What is everybody with illiterate gene not listening to the show today? Where is everybody? Houston, Texas. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation.
Right here, Michael. I'm listening. The reason we're not seeing anything about the churches burning in Egypt is because, what was it, a month ago that we were seeing how it's the youth in dungarees. They don't want to go back and say, oh, look, Savage was right again. It's the Muslim Brotherhood who took over, and now they're getting out the Christians.
I would like to see Anderson Cooper thrown out of the journalist profession. I will not stop until somebody takes this man on the next time he appears somewhere in love with himself, that narcissistic fool, and says to him, how dare you get up there and talk as though you know what you're talking about when you were glorifying the burning of Egypt to the ground. Listen to this. We have the sound bites here. I want you to listen to the rhapsodies about the people defeating tyranny. In clip number 8, this is Anderson Cooper, February 11, 2011.
And tonight, this night, this glorious morning in Cairo and throughout Egypt, it is fact. Fear has been defeated in Egypt. This is what liberation looks like. This is what joy, long suppressed, long imprisoned, long tortured and tormented, this is what joy looks like and sounds like.
So Anderson Cooper glorified the death of a modicum of civility in Egypt and the arrival of Muslim tyranny, radical Muslim tyranny in Egypt, and he's not being called on the carpet for it. Anderson Cooper should be called out every time he appears with that smirk on his face and be forced to explain that not only was he dead wrong, but he's responsible for the deaths of the Coptic Christians. Listen to the rest. Listen to clip 9.
Tonight, Saturday morning in Egypt, the revolution has won. The dictator Mubarak is gone, but the new day dawning is not yet a democracy. These people may have liberated Egypt, but the military now runs it. They've always had a tight grip on the economy and a long history of wielding power.
Now listen to the next one. This is, again, Anderson Cooper celebrating the overthrow of Mubarak and what he said was the arrival on the scene of a peaceful, loving people.
Tired of the indignities they had suffered at the hands of Mubarak for some 30 years, at the hands of his police and his thugs.
Right.
They had
turn this man off. I can't take it because this is an ignoramus. This is a narcissistic ignoramus. If he was not from West Hollywood and part of the golden group that runs the American media, this man would be thrown out of the media for what he has done. Anderson Cooper is single-handedly responsible for glorifying the overthrow of what we had as a friend in Egypt. Remember, Mubarak, as imperfect as he was our greatest ally in the most populous Muslim nation on earth. Right now, Egypt is in shambles, and Egypt is turning into a radical Muslim nation, the same way that Iran turned into a radical Muslim nation after the overthrow of the Shah of Iran. That's a direct result of the vermin in the media, and the case in point of the number one worm in the media who has turned totally in favor of the worst people and the worst things on earth is Anderson Cooper. And I'm not going to stop hammering him until others in the media start to say, well, who's responsible for the Muslim Brotherhood rising up in Egypt and elsewhere in the Middle East? Was it possibly the media? Was it possibly CNN? Was it possibly Anderson Cooper and his wonderful self-love? Is that who did it? We're going to keep this up until finally we get an answer from CNN as to why they still have Anderson Cooper on the air and why he hasn't been fired. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
How can we follow leader when it's a corrupt one? The government's a G-unit and they might buck young black people. Black people in the urban area one. I hold up a peace sign, but I carry a gun.
Is it then possible that whatever your overriding message, that, you know, killing cops is a very serious matter, you can basically say anything as long as your overriding message is positive and get invited to the White House.
It's ironic to pick out those particular lyrics and about this particular artist when, in fact, he's known as a socially conscious. You can oppose some of what he's done and appreciate some of the other things he's done. I think that's all I've said.
Socially conscious, which is a code word for communist. Socially conscious, code words for communist. Socially conscious, code words for revolutionary Marxist. Socially conscious, code word for anti-white. Socially conscious, code words for anti-police. Socially conscious, code words for illiterate hater of society. Socially conscious, code words for anything you want to make it into. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, to show you what this administration is doing to our society. Did you hear the story about the TSA frisking an infant in a stroller at the Kansas City International Airport? About the perverts in the TSA doing this to an infant? Federal officials insisted today that screeners at KCI were just doing their jobs. They were just following orders. Big Sis has orders, special orders, that we frisk. Yeah, we frisk the old, we frisk the young, but we frisk and we frisk. And if you don't follow orders, you go this way to the left or this way to the right. But we are following the orders of Big Sis. They frisk a baby, and it's put up on a cell phone picture of the pat-down on Twitter. The baby's stroller apparently set off an alert of possible traces of explosives, which means probably there was doo-doo in the diaper. But since the dummies at the TSA checkout counters don't know the difference between human waste and explosives, the screeners took a closer look at the boy cradled in his mother's arms. The incident was so horrible that pictures were posted and put up on Twitter. A pastor said that there were 300,000 viewers, wound up on various and sundry sites around the world. The woman whose baby was patted down contacted him later, and he apologized profusely for drawing all of the attention to her and her child. The pastor said, "I apologized." He said, "I regret that I tweeted the picture," but she was laughing the whole thing off. The fact of the matter is, this frisking of a baby is similar to a story about a six-year-old girl who was patted down at an airport in New Orleans not too long ago. The girl's mother said she asked why her daughter, the infant, was selected for a pat-down, but was not given an answer by the fascists who work for Big Sis. The fact of the matter is, this has to come to an end, but this is part and parcel of the debasement of the American people under Barack Hussein Obama's TSA. Dan in Ohio, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening. I'm just amazed at the lack of leadership in this country. I cannot wait for a leader to take over this country to lead us as a president that's actually got good morality and courage to do what's right for this country. But the reason I was calling up was you'd made the comment about Christians being killed and churches being burned down in Egypt. And I've heard nothing about that in the mainstream media.
Are you surprised you haven't heard anything about it, even from the so-called conservative media on Fox News? Have they covered it?
Not to be honest with you. I've been too busy to be watching TV.
Well, the reason they don't cover it is that Fox News News Corporation is 19% owned by a Saudi billionaire. Did you know that?
I believe I've heard you talk about that in your show.
Yeah, that is why Fox News is very, very pro-illegal immigration, number one, and number two, very soft on Islamic terrorism. And so we have a real problem in this country when the so-called leading voice of conservatives on television, Fox News, which is used as a bête noire by Obama, doesn't talk about some of the most important issues for our survival. But that is why this program, I think, survives altogether. Okay, let's go to the calls. Alabama, Cameron, welcome to the program.
Hi, I just want to say that all hip-hop should not be lumped into one category.
And?
Obviously, things that glorify the killing of cops or smoking crack obviously is not art. But there is lots of good hip-hop that, you know, sends a positive message that should be recognized as art.
Well, I don't care if it sends a positive or negative message. It's not art. It's not art, and it's not literacy. It's not poetry. It's something else. It's a form of lingo, street lingo, that millions of people follow because they don't have the skills or the vocabulary necessary to follow real music and real poetry and real literature. It doesn't elevate what they are stating or what they are doing to the level of music or art.
I would have to disagree.
Well, that's like calling pornography art. Do you understand how this started? The degenerate who was selling pornography in Penthouse magazine hired a shyster lawyer to go before the Supreme Court, who argued that art is in the eyes of the beholder, and lewd pornographic images are the equivalent of looking at a painting of the Mona Lisa, and it's all a matter of perception. And from that day forward, the society has been in a free fall culturally and socially. One degenerate man who ran a porno magazine basically is responsible for debasing the entire culture, the same way one president debased the sexual mores of the nation. Thank you for the call. What else do you want to talk about? Let's go to Bill in New York. He's on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, from WOR. Go ahead, please.
So I want to talk about the trade deficit, which is as bad as the budget deficit. We're going broke in both directions because the Congress, both parties, have pretty much sold out to the WTO and the common market. And, the nonsense of free trade, when you go to...
You agree with me that we're one of the only countries on earth that still espouses the maxim that free trade is good, because we're not engaged in free trade when there are trade barriers in almost every other nation on earth.
Right. It's absolute nonsense, because in PhD school, what you talk about is trade equilibrium. Unfeathered free trade, you would go bankrupt very quickly. And
we have gone bankrupt very quickly because, as I say, some very powerful special interests are running the country, not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I happen to know that American manufacturers face trade barriers in the form of various and sundry taxes, which you may as well call, you can call them anything you want. You can call them tariffs, but they're not called tariffs. They're called other things, taxes and this and that. But they can dump their products on our country's doorstep without any such barriers.
Before the income tax, the whole tariff paid for the whole government of the United States. And unless we put in some tariffs, there'll be no manufacturing base left in the United States, because...
Absolutely right, which I've been calling for, and Donald Trump called for tariffs. Unfortunately, he stepped into the wrong arena. Did not listen to the right people. He listened to an enemy within his own camp who led him down the birther path that destroyed him. I've seen it happen before. I tried to stop it. I sent him an email. I said, watch out, you're going down the wrong road. Don't listen to that lawyer in your organization. He's an Obama supporter. He was a Dukakis supporter. Donald, stop it. Don't go down this avenue. But I knew it was too late. I saw it happen with Bob Dole. I saw it happen with every other middle-of-the-road Republican before. They get Democrat advisors who whisper in their ear when they're really working for the other team. So the tariff issue is a very important one, and the only way to save America right now is to, A, start raising interest rates to reflect the actual inflation that we're living in, and, two, establish tariffs. We can immediately see our country on a road to a healthier economy, in my estimation.
I have one more comment.
And also fire Ben Bernanke. Fire Ben Bernanke for being one of the biggest liars in the history of that position. How dare he stand up there and say that only government-released money is the only money that should be released into the money supply? Do you agree with me that by keeping interest rates arbitrarily at zero, what you're doing is keeping people from putting money into banks, and as a result, banks are not lending money because they don't have the money to lend?
Well, banks really don't like to lend money. What they do is they take that money that's in the savings account and they invest it in financial markets. Because 80% of
they invested in what?
In financial markets, securities markets, stock markets, portfolios, like Citibank's losses.
Wait a minute. Slow down. When interest rates were at a reasonable level, banks were rushing to give loans to ordinary people for expanding their businesses or whatever. They're not doing that right now because they're not sitting on as much money.
But traditionally, 80% of profits of most banking financial institutions has come from their portfolio, which is speculating in financial markets. That's how Citibank ran up a $400 billion
loan. Isn't that a recent phenomenon, a rather recent phenomenon, from when the rules were changed, the Glass-Steagall Act being removed, and the uptick rule being removed by the various and sundry administrations? But prior to that, there was much better controls which permitted banks to invest in healthier venues?
Right. But what happens is, as far as GDP is concerned, investing in financial markets or investing in putting it in a bank is the same thing. So it's, you know, it's equivalent as far as GDP is
well,
concerned.
Well, I guess my main point is that Benjamin Bernanke may as well be working for the ex-Soviet Politburo in terms of shrinking the money supply and constraining it so that it only flows from Obama and the administration. That's how centralized governments work. They want to control the money supply. They want to control where the money goes. And the only way they can do that is by making sure that the money to begin with is restricted. So they keep interest rates at an arbitrarily low number. People don't put their money into savings accounts. The banks are not sitting on these huge reserves as they once were. Consequently, they're much tighter in who they give money to. The money supply dries up, and the people then start to look to the centralized government for relief. That is how the Politburo worked in the ex-Soviet Union. That is how it's working under the naked communist Barack Obama. I don't give a rat's behind about Osama bin Laden, and I don't care anymore about his posturing over and over again. The man has wrecked the economy. The man has wrecked the society. Him and his wife are debasing the society. They're debasing the culture, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I am just sick of it. Jesse in Salt Lake City, welcome to the program.
Mike, the baggy clothes and the hip-hop artist, it comes straight out of prison.
I know that. That's right. I understand that. I understand that very well, but the fact of the matter is the clothing that they're selling now for the pieces of apparel, they're not poverty clothes, are they?
No. It's the one size fits all that originated out of-
And the baggy clothing is very useful if you're dealing crack or you're hiding weapons from police. Is that correct?
Yeah, or hiding a big shank, you know, if you're in prison. Same thing. It just followed them onto the streets, and now it's a popular thing to wear.
So to me, that costume is that of a prisoner. And for any kid to put on that costume, and most of the jerky white boys in the suburbs are walking around with their pants falling off their behind, holding it up with their hands, it's disgusting, frankly. It shows that there's no father in the house. Because if there was a father in the house, he would say, over my dead body are you leaving with that prison outfit on. Go put a pair of pants on like a human being or you're not leaving the house. That's what a father should do. That's what I would do. And there are no fathers around anymore. They think it's fine because Junior apes some rap artist that they saw on a television show on MTV. So, you know, you say, well, okay, what's the big deal? Everything, what's the big deal? Little by little, what's the big deal till there's nothing left in the society, whether it's economic or social? I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Here's an earth-shattering story. Bed bugs. You know about bed bugs, and we've been told that they don't carry disease. Well, bad news. Drug-resistant bacteria found in bed bugs. That's right. Bed bugs with superbug germ found. Superbug germ detected in bed bugs, study finds. Bed bugs with superbugs discovered. It's really frightening when you think about it because, as you know, there was a bed bug epidemic, and that was swept under the rug by the hotel industry, who had you rightfully fearing, you know, who slept in the bed before you. And now it turns out that researchers in Vancouver, BC, have found bed bugs carrying drug-resistant staph, MRSA, and vancomycin-resistant enterococci. Take a very deep breath. Now take another very deep breath. It's sure they found this on only three patients who live in Vancouver's downtown east side, which is a terrible neighborhood, a junky neighborhood, a homeless neighborhood, filled with junkies and bums of the lowest order. Okay. But that's how diseases start. They start in the worst neighborhoods, and then they spread out from there. And the patients were hospitalized in Vancouver and found to be infested with bed bugs. But worse than that, the bed bugs had drug-resistant bacteria within their within the bed bugs. Bed bugs from the third man were carrying the classic community-associated strain of MRSA, and it was resistant to various and powerful antibiotics. Is it significant? Well, they'll tell you it isn't. They'll tell you there's nothing to worry about. They'll tell you to go on with your vacation. They'll tell you not to even pick up the cover when you get into your room, and if you get a bite, don't worry about bed bugs. Don't carry disease. All of the above are not reasonable. what would be reasonable would be to do what I do on the rare occasions I have to go to a hotel. A, strip off the cover. B, strip off the sheet. I told you I went to a hotel in Cancun 2 years ago. A top flight hotel and a corner room, top floor, overlooking the ocean. I said to the bellhop, I said, wait a minute, before you leave, I took off the top cover, took off the sheet. Lo and behold, there was a blood stain on the mattress as large as a baby's stroller. Now, either somebody was killed on the mattress or something worse, or let's say something equivalent happened on the mattress. But I got a little angry, and I said, get this out of my room and bring me a new mattress, which they did. Fortunately for me, they did bring me a new mattress because it was a high-class hotel. But that's an extreme example of what you're going to be facing in hotels these days because of the poor, the breakdown, in essence, in our societal norms on every level, whether it be what's called poetry when it isn't or what's called hygiene when it isn't. You want to talk about immigration? When your grandfather or great-grandfather came here or grandmother, they had to go through a screening to see if they were diseased. Wouldn't that be reasonable? Wouldn't a normally healthy population want to protect itself from a scourge of disease from the third world? Right. So you have health screeners at immigration checkpoints, and those who are, let's say, coughing up blood or have blood in their sputum or, let's say, have leprosy get pushed off to the side and they're either put into quarantine or sent back home. Well, that was a long time ago before Bill Clinton and the Democrat machine came along. And they wiped away virtually all immigration controls. Now, click, click, fast forward, and you have Obama not only saying that it is good to have illegal immigrants in the country, but that we want to turn criminals into citizens. And you want to take the millions of people who have done it legally and are waiting online legally and push them to the back of the bus and give amnesty to those who forced their way to the front of the line because they're criminals. That's what you have in the White House. That's what you call a Marxist social revolution. That's what you have going on in plain sight. He is not even hiding his Marxist revolutionary actions. They're occurring right before your eyes. This is how I see it. It's one man's opinion. But remember, it's a fairly educated opinion. It's quite an educated opinion, by the way. And I can tell you that you've only seen the beginning of what this man will do unless more and more people speak out against him and what he is doing to this nation, whether it be on inviting a man who glorifies cop killing and calling him an artist when he's nothing but an illiterate street bum, as far as I'm concerned, into the White House, debasing the White House, debasing the First Lady's position in America, debasing the word poetry, debasing the word music, or granting or wanting to grant amnesty to illegal aliens. You understand it? Houston, Judy, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Mike, it breaks my heart to tell you this. My husband and I will retire very shortly. We will leave the country. We've done the math. We don't think we can live under Obama rule any longer, especially retired on a fixed income.
Where are you going?
We're going to the Dominican Republic.
Well, I wouldn't burn my bridges back to America. I hope you don't burn your passports when you get there.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. We'd never give up our American citizenship. Never, never.
Remember, Obama is only a temporary blip on the screen of freedom in this country. He is debasing the White House, but he's not going to be there forever, unless they change the rules very shortly, which could happen. Well, I wish you luck in your new homeland. I wouldn't go to the Dominican Republic if they gave it to me for free, frankly. Number one, I don't like the heat, and number two, I don't like the third world. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And here's what we've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. Obama's pushing the DREAM Act again. What does that mean? Of course it's a dream if you're here illegally and you would get amnesty and then you could vote for Democrats. Well, that's what he wants to do, is give amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. Another topic, Michelle Obama invited a rapper to the White House, quote-unquote, poetry night. Needless to say, rap is not poetry. But the question is, has Michelle Obama debased the White House or raised the White House? Has she debased the White House? You think Michelle Obama is out of control? Do you think she's trying to insult the nation? Would you allow your child to listen to this rap artist, so on, so forth and so on? Another big topic lost by the media on purpose is that the Muslims in Egypt are burning Christian churches during the Arab Spring. And I'm asking you, who do you blame? Hundreds of Muslims hurled stones at Christians after Muslim mobs set fire to a church and Christian-owned apartments, killing 12 and injuring over 200 in Egypt. You didn't read about it, did you? Now, who in the media do you blame the most, aside from Anderson Cooper of CNN, who I think should be thrown out of the journalism profession for what he did in glorifying the so-called young people in dungarees with Blackberries? Why is the administration ignoring violence against Christians? And the killing of Coptic Christians should affect everybody in America. What else is on MichaelSavage.com? Well, let's see. Obama panders to illegals for votes, insults the rule of law. The Navy has halted a move to allow gay unions by chaplains. Same-sex marriages in the Navy? You betcha. President to renew Muslim outreach. The Yemenite who stormed the cockpit of an airplane the other day is being defended by his family, who said he didn't understand English, and although he screamed Allahu Akbar, he was looking for the bathroom. Mastermind of terror or a dottery old fool, asks the London Daily Mail about Osama bin Laden, been gone now. Sanctuary cities ban passes in Texas House. Liberals in southern Arizona seek to form new state. 52% of Republicans want a third party. Few are surprised that Trump University is being sued for fraud. The Associated Press's case for releasing bin Laden photo. They want it. So do I. Haven't seen it. The Senate GOP blocks a justice nominee. Thank God. Thank God. Muslims killing Christians and burning churches in the Arab Spring. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. Bin Laden was not on kidney dialysis, and he took herbal Viagra. Herbal Viagra? All of this and more is on MichaelSavage.com, and if you want to see the so-called rapper who Michelle is inviting into the White House, which she's turning into an outhouse, take a look at him on MichaelSavage.com. Youths sue Colorado over climate change. Earth Guardian Group, a plaintiff in the suit against the state, claiming that global warming is killing the people, blah, blah, blah. What else is on the website? Farmers across America are ditching tractors for oxen to beat rising fuel prices. That's interesting. Savage eats with Lorenzo at North Beach Restaurant in San Francisco. It's not a bad picture. The food was great. I wish the picture was better. Savage ratings soaring on the bottom of MichaelSavage.com. You know, today I was walking around San Francisco before the radio show, and I love this city. I don't necessarily love the politics. I ignore the politics, but I love the city. I love the downtown particularly. And I pass an Immigration and Naturalization Service building, and there was a line wrapped around the block. I saw people mainly from Asia and from Latin America waiting patiently online for their green cards or whatever they were waiting for. My first instinct was, they're just like my grandfather. Maybe they want to start a new life here. Maybe they're fleeing oppression in their land. And I said, well, you're the son of an immigrant. You can understand that. So they're waiting online for their green card, their promise of a citizenship. It's a great thing to have. And my second thought was, wait a minute. The lifeboat is sinking. The lifeboat is sinking. We're broke. We can't afford any more immigrants. What we need is an immigration holiday. No immigrants. Slam the door shut, legal or illegal. We can't afford it. The country is broke. And yet we have a president who says, whether you come here legally or you sneak in, it's all the same to him. How can he remain in office one day, I ask myself, with such corruption, with such evil coming out of this White House. It's seeping out like a pus out of a you know, this man, when he talks and I hear what he has to say, I feel like I'm looking at pus coming out of a wound. I don't have any other words for it. How does he let his friend Jeff Immelt of GE get away without paying taxes? How can any liberal listening to this show say you think that's a good thing? How could you idiots say that's wonderful? Why? Because he owns NBC and MSNBC and you like the communist propaganda you hear? Say that GE should pay no taxes because they worked for Obama? It's unbelievable to me. The currency is in free fall. The economy is in a disastrous state. Gasoline's $5 a gallon and heading higher. The war in Afghanistan is being lost because of lack of willpower on the part of the leaders. There's no leadership. There's no commander in chief. He's invisible. When has he last given a speech to the troops? Go out and kill the enemy. Go out and mop up the floor with those bastards, those throwbacks. He hasn't said that. Which side is he on? He was reluctantly dragged into the Afghan war. So therefore, the boys don't know what to do over there. They know if they actually do their job, they're going to get court-martialed. So where does all this come from? It comes from his political orientation. As I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty, I'm going to read you one or two paragraphs. I'm going to go back now to something you need to know, which is his time at Occidental College. You must know this. And here's what I wrote. Just as Karl Marx aligned himself with a wealthy patron who picked up the tab for his lifestyle, Obama did the same thing while a student pursuing his Marxist ideologies at Occidental College. In a moment, I'll explain why this is noteworthy. Let's begin with Obama's choice of a roommate. Mohammed Hassan Chandu, a wealthy Pakistani student. John Drew, Obama's contemporary at Oxy, wrote this. He wrote, when Barack Obama was a young man at Occidental College his sophomore year, he had a very wealthy patron in Hassan Chandu. They had a wonderful big house where they threw lavish parties. Chandu was throwing the money around. Obama was dressed in the nicest, slickest clothes. I thought they were both wealthy. Dr. Drew recalls going out to dinner with Obama and his roommate, Chandu, in Chandu's BMW, while arguing for hours about the merits of Marxism and Leninism over drinks and cigarettes. And then he says, Obama was arguing a straightforward Marxist-Leninist class struggle point of view, which anticipated that there would be a revolution of the working class led by revolutionaries who would overthrow the capitalist system and institute a new socialist government that would redistribute the wealth, close quote. Then I write, do you see the irony? On one hand, Barack Obama, a student who comes from a broken home and with no visible means of support, was living high on the hog, compliments of his rich roommate. On the other hand, Obama was arguing about the merits of redistributing the wealth to end class struggle. Doesn't that strike you as bizarre, if not downright hypocritical? He and Marx had a lot in common. Both suffered from a severe case of class envy, coupled with an entitlement mentality. Each wanted the good life, neither wanted to work for it. Both were happy to sponge off someone else. And so it should come as no surprise that when Obama's patron saint pulled out of town, that was his cue to move on to greener pastures to find another sugar daddy. Here's how Dr. Drew saw it. Quote, when Obama knew that Chandu was going to leave Occidental College, he knew that the money supply was gone. The big house was gone. The parties were done. And he thought it was better for him to get the heck out of there and go to Columbia, because Chandu wasn't financing his lifestyle anymore. I don't believe Obama was ever able to create that same charismatic presence on the Columbia campus. Now, I spend a few other pages on pages 78, 74, 5, 6 on Obama at the College Occidental and then at Columbia. And it's all about his love affair with communism, Marxism, and what Obama wants to do to America, and what, frankly, he would be doing had he not been derailed by the Tea Party movement and the elections of November. If you don't think you've had an effect, you're wrong. By mere dint of the fact that the radical left, the scum, the union vermin, are now attacking Republicans at town hall meetings, is the fact that they're going to do what the classic what communists have done through the ages and in every other country. They're going to get thuggish. They're going to try to shout us down. They're going to try and shout down anyone who stands for the free market. And that is why I'm calling upon you to do what those young Cuban Americans did back in 2000 when they scared the heck out of those cowardly lawyers from NYU and Columbia and Harvard who went down to rig the election for Al Gore. Do you remember that picture? I'll never forget it. Of the Cuban Americans with the white shirts in Florida banging on the glass walls where the ballots were being counted. They scared the boys with the big glasses, and they did their job correctly rather than their jury rig it. And that's what you need to do. You've got to fight fire with fire. You cannot sit back and listen to the radio. You're going to have to start going to the town hall meetings again. You're going to have to start organizing again. You're going to have to get in the faces of these thugs, and you're going to have to do it to save this country, because they're on a road to destroy the free market and to destroy everything that we stand for. Now, I just want to put one caveat in this. When I say free market, I'm not talking about a crony capitalism of the type that Obama is supporting. He has gone to the same well three times this month. Who are these people giving him these millions and millions and millions of dollars? I don't know. The list hasn't been released. That's another part of his secrecy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business.
Come with me, my love, to the sea of love. I want to tell you how.
It is the Savage Nation, heard across America. So as we broke off for the commercial messages, I went into a little philosophy, and I said, the day you realize we were put in this earth to suffer is the day you suffer less, which came out of me. I felt liberated from a certain struggle that's going on within myself right now. And I wanted to tell you, my audience, something. The thing that motivates me most about doing radio is a moment like that, is that I struggle just as you do in trying to punch through the daily grind, so to speak, the rote, just being another mote in the mire and struggling along until the day we're gone. And the fact is that only at a moment like that, when I come up with ideas that I think are valid and quotables, do I feel validated. I felt as though I produced a pearl from within the oyster of pain and the oyster of suffering. So I don't want to over-dramatize the issue of suffering, because I know what real suffering is, and this is not suffering. This is more or less the proper word would be the anguish of life itself, because life is anguishing. And part of the problem with our society is the mythology that everyone's happy but you. The Real Housewives of New York, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, the Real Housewives of Washington, mob wives, they're all such big mouths, and they're all so happy, and they're all having such dramatic lives, and only you're home alone, isolated and alone and suffering. Only you are, not them. They find these low lives and put a camera in front of them, and suddenly they're a star. And the fact of the matter is, everybody is the same exact way. And no matter what show they put on, like the other guy's happy every minute, he's got the yacht and the wife, sure, he's probably got more happiness than the guy riding the subway, in the sense of self-achievement. But I don't for a minute, see, I have a strange view of life. I happen to believe that in a way, I've held this belief since I'm 17, it's a certain quotient I've had in my mind, and maybe it's a mythology of my own, but everybody invents them in order to get through life. But I used to come to the understanding, I came to the understanding in my own life that I think that in the whole scheme of life, unless it's cut short in childhood or something like that, I think that there's a balance between the kind of the suffering that we all go through and the sadness, meaning the very rich man riding around in a limousine, he's full of anguish. He's got 40 lawsuits going on at any one time. He's got the third young wife of his life who's probably cheating on him, or he's got a private detective watching to make sure she isn't. She's in hell because she married an old dude that she can't stand, but she's got to shine it on every day. Then they got a kid in rehab who can't stand both of them and knows it's all bogus. Even though he lives in a 16-room apartment on Fifth Avenue, he's still miserable, more miserable than the kid who's working, delivering a newspaper because he's got no reason to live. So at the end of the day, there's some kind of quotient that God creates for all of us, I used to think. And maybe I was mythologizing the whole, making the whole thing up in order to justify my own struggles. But at the end of the day, truthfully, to me, radio is not so much about making money or showing you how smart I am or whatever, ratings. It's coming, punching through the vicissitudes of existence and for a moment flying like an eagle, coming up with a word, a concept, a stringing of words that might liberate someone listening to this program for a moment. I quoted, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. It was Lenin who said it, not Marx. And it came about when one of Lenin's fellow Bolsheviks asked him to justify the growing number of atrocities they were committing in the name of a socialist future. Then Lenin said, oh, well, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. My suspicion is that as a pan-Leninist, Mr. Obama is willing to break a few eggs to make the new omelet called the New World Order in the name of a socialist revolution. I'm going to quote somebody right now. Class struggle, he wrote, class struggle. Classes struggle. Some classes triumph, others are eliminated. Such is history. Such is the history of civilization for thousands of years. Chairman Mao Tse-tung. Here's another quote from Chairman Mao, a favorite of the hippie generation. Changes in society are due chiefly to the development of the internal contradictions in society. That is the contradiction between the productive forces and the relations of production, the contradiction between classes and the contradiction between the old and the new. It is the development of these contradictions that pushes society forward and gives the impetus for the supersession of the old society by the new. In every in class society, everyone lives as a member of a particular class, and every kind of thinking without exception is stamped with the brand of a class. This is all out of quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-tung.
Savage.
How about tax? How about tax reform? Well, Daniel Mitchell is an expert on tax reform. He's a senior fellow for the Cato Institute. He's here on the Savage Nation to talk about April's jobs numbers and why the U.S. economy is still really struggling to get off the ground. Daniel, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Michael.
Well, April was the 15th consecutive month where the economy added jobs, yet the unemployment rate went back up 9%. How can that be?
There's a couple of moving pieces that you have to pay attention to. One is there's natural growth in the population, so the economy better create jobs each month, otherwise you'll have rising unemployment. And then you also have, and this is the really important variable, you also have the number of people in the labor force. Lots of people drop out of and lots of people climb into the labor force depending on their family circumstances, personal circumstances. You have what's known as the discouraged worker phenomenon where people just give up. And then, of course, you have the interplay of job numbers with government handouts. Governments, in effect, over time, bribe people to be unemployed by giving them money from the taxpayers. And so all these things are mixed together and help explain why this has been the stereotypical jobless recovery.
Well, what's keeping the private sector from adding jobs?
I think we have a lot of uncertainty in the economy, everything from what's going to happen with future tax rates to whether or not the Federal Reserve's monetary policy has been irresponsible and sort of sowing the seeds of future inflation. In some sense, the worst-case scenario, but it might also be a likely scenario, is that we're going back to the kind of stagflation we had in the 1970s with a weak economy combined with prices rising and other things resulting from the Federal Reserve's what some people say is reckless behavior, and I certainly worry about it myself. And think about it. Why do companies create jobs? Companies create jobs because they think it's going to help them make profits. You know, no one's going to hire me or you or anybody out there in America unless they think hiring us or them is going to increase the bottom line. But if government is imposing all these regulations and taxes and wasting all this money in the budget, it makes it so that as a private employer, you're thinking, well, maybe I don't want to take on this additional worker. The government's just making it not worthwhile.
But wouldn't the Fed raising interest rates kill any recovery?
Interest rates are one of these funny variables where we all think we like low interest rates, but if we're savers, we like high interest rates because we want a better return on our money. If we're investing money, we want a high return on our money, which implies high interest rates. So if you actually look through time, during periods of high interest rates, those are actually associated with better economic performance. When you have very low interest rates, like Japan's had during their great stagnation, like we had during the Great Depression, low interest rates are usually a sign of economic weakness. It means that nobody really wants credit because there aren't profitable opportunities to invest money. So I don't see high interest rates as being a good thing, but I definitely don't see low interest rates as being a good thing. What I simply want is vibrant growth from the private sector, and that probably will be associated with higher interest rates, but the higher interest rates are the tail, not the dog.
What's the most effective thing the administration can do to help jumpstart this recovery, in your opinion?
There are all sorts of things that could help the economy. It would be hard to pick one silver bullet. Certainly, taking tax increases off the table would help. Dramatically getting control of government spending would really make a big difference. The important thing to recognize about government spending, we all focus about the waste and the fraud and stuff like that, and yes, we should be upset about how government squanders money, but the important thing to understand from an economic perspective is that every dollar the government spends is a dollar that's diverted from the productive sector of the economy. In other words, when we're letting, I don't want to sound like a boring economist, but if we're letting government allocate resources, capital and labor in our economy, we're going to get much worse performance than if we let the private sector allocate those resources. In other words, we want to get the most bang for the buck with the investment and the jobs in our economy, and that means leaving more for the private sector to allocate and less for the politicians to allocate.
Well, I don't think raising the debt limit will do it. Do you think raising the debt limit will help?
Well, the debt limit, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, is the accumulation of all the past deficits we've had, plus some intra-government borrowing, things like the Social Security Trust Fund. But the simple thing to focus on is, because we have these giant budget deficits under Obama, we also, of course, had big ones under Bush, because too much spending tends to be a bipartisan problem. Because we have these big deficits, it means that we're bumping up against the debt limit. And if we don't raise the debt limit, that means politicians overnight would have to balance the budget. And they'd only be able to balance the budget at government spending about 65 cents out of every dollar that they were planning on spending. Now, a lot of us would say, good, government should be forced to finally balance their books. And I certainly have some sympathy for that position. But in all likelihood, what really is going to happen is that the Republicans in the House of Representatives are going to say, okay, Obama, if you want a higher debt limit increase so you can do more deficit spending, you better agree to some policies or some reforms that will at least begin to bring this unchecked federal budget under control. Now, whether that's actually changing some programs and reforming them so that the spending is lower, whether that's budget process reform like a balanced budget amendment or Senator Corker's CAP Act, which would just limit the size of government relative to the economy's output, there are all sorts of ideas out there that are sort of competing for attention in terms of what Republicans will push, but they better get something in exchange for a debt limit. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of angry Tea Party folks and other voters who are going to say, why on earth did we give Republicans power in Congress if they're just going to roll over and let Clinton spend more, Obama spend more money?
Do you think we'll see any spending cuts attached to this debt limit debate?
It's a question of how bold we want to be. Now, at the Cato Institute, we think the federal government should be dramatically scaled back. For much of our nation's history, the federal budget was only about 3% of GDP. Now it's 24% of GDP. So overnight, from the Cato Institute perspective, we could balance the budget, matter of fact, have a giant surplus and be able to afford a sweeping tax reform. But realistically, the political system, what can we expect? Even some of the good hardcore Tea Party Republicans that were just elected probably would not feel comfortable cutting one-third of the federal budget. And I'm talking real cuts, not these phony Washington cuts where you don't increase spending as fast as you wanted to. We're talking about, instead of spending $3.8 trillion, overnight, we'd only be allowed to spend about $2.3 trillion. And even the good guys probably think that's just too much, too fast. for the political system to absorb. And in other words, that means that there will be some increase in the debt limit, even if you're dramatically slowing the growth of government spending, because we're so deep in a hole of debt and deficits, it does mean that we'll have to borrow more money just because of what's already built into the system. But the question is, what are you doing about the future? Okay, yes, you spent too much, you've gotten in trouble, you have this big credit card bill, you have to pay off your monthly balance on this credit card bill, but do not engage in the same reckless pattern in the future. And that's really what this debate is all about. Will Republicans be able to extract some sort of price from Obama so that we don't have all this continued trillion-dollar-plus deficits because of all the excess wasteful spending?
In your opinion, what spending priorities should we be concentrating on?
There's no question that the driving force in terms of the budget growing too fast are the entitlement programs, specifically the health care entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare. Yes, Social Security is part of it, but that's actually a relatively small part of it. But then we also have all these departments and programs that shouldn't even exist. There shouldn't be a federal Department of Education or Department of Agriculture or Department of Housing and Urban Development or Department of Energy. I could go on and on. So in the long run, the big thing we need to fix is entitlement programs. In the short run, we should be devolving out of Washington all these programs and departments and agencies that simply state it should not exist.
Daniel, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on the program. Always great to try to touch base with real Americans. If people want more information, the Cato website is simplecato.org, and my blog is International Liberty. If you just type Dan Mitchell blog in Google, you'll get to it very simply. Thanks again for having me on.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've shifted a little bit into some lifestyle questions and answers for a few minutes. Let's take another one right here on the Savage Nation. Sacramento Lee, what's on your mind?
Michael.
Yes.
I'm redecorating my office, and
yes,
my wife wants to paint it coral. I want to paint it Merlot, and my gun case is this beautiful, rich mahogany case. Can you decide this problem?
Is this a real question?
It is, absolutely.
Well, look, whose office is it?
It's mine. I want a man's office. I don't.
Who has to live in the office most all the time? You, right? Not your wife.
Yes, of course.
So, what is it? Why does she insist on her color scheme?
Well, she felt that the mahogany would pop better off the wall with the coral background rather than the Merlot.
And but you don't like coral because it's like a rental color.
Exactly. And you know, if you get it wrong, you get those pink overtones, and that's exactly what I.
Yeah, it looks like a rental office. Maybe she's thinking of getting rid of you and renting out the office. You never know. No, it's like a rental beige. I always worry about people who redecorate with neutral colors. I said, what are you thinking? Why is it neutral? You live here. What color do you really like? Why are you going for a neutral color?
Exactly. I mean,
no, I myself tend towards the dramatic. I like burgundies. I like very bold color schemes. So you want which color?
It's a Merlot. It's a pretty dark, rich red color.
Better known as like burgundy, right?
Burgundy, exactly.
Right, but you're in Sacramento, so they renamed the paint Merlot, but it's burgundy. In other words, if you went to buy a Buick back in the 1950s, you wouldn't have said, I'd like a Merlot Buick, I'd like a burgundy Buick, right?
Exactly.
A burgundy, because that's very Bordello-like. That could be why she doesn't like it.
That could be an issue. A lot of my collection is brass objects, so I think that they'll look really good against that dark color.
I do, too. And what you should say to her, if she's not, is she listening to the show?
No, but she really will follow what you say.
I would suggest you say to her in a very nice way, you know, honey, I really like, what's the color, coral?
Carl, yeah.
I really like the color Carl, but that's more for a bedroom. I have to spend my working life in this color. I like a cave-like feel where I feel secure, and I want to act like a caveman for you so I can defeat the enemy and make more money.
She'll love that.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I swear I love these segments. This is wonderful fun. It relieves me from having to talk about the naked Marxists in the White House. You know, against Sacramento. What is it? I have one station? New York. Hasida in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Is it Hasida or Chasida?
Hasida, that, you know, guttural Hebrew sound.
Yes. Yes. Hasida like Hasidim. What's on your mind?
So I'm a recent grad from a SUNY, State University of New York, and I've been job hunting. I've had some great internships, great experience, and I've just keep hitting walls. I was wondering what your advice was as a, you know, recent grad in this economy.
Very, very, very bad. Very, very hard to be a college grad looking for work. It must be awfully depressing. I've been there. I have been through it most of my life until I entered radio and everything changed. But I remember getting out of college, Queens College. It was a bachelor's degree. I didn't know what I wanted to do. The kids who I went to college with were either going to medical school or dental school or law school, right? And those who couldn't do anything else went into journalism. But you're asking what you should do in a job market where there are no jobs. So let's start with the obvious, and you'll say I've done it already. Are there any family members who are successful, prominent business owners?
Yes, and I've been speaking to them, working the connections, and it's what it
comes. Well, no, let me explain something. We had a family member who we don't talk to who got out of Harvard Law School 15 years ago. You know what they taught her in her seminar, her last seminar? Look for your first case within your family. In other words, sue someone in your family. I swear to God, that's what they were teaching lawyers from Harvard 15 years ago. There's nothing wrong with using your family connections to get started. Can you go to work? You don't have to. Look, Hasina, you can't ask. You got to demand. You got to lean on them and say, look, there's no jobs out there. I'm super qualified. I'm smart. I can work for you. I can be better than any of your employees. I need you to hire me. You got to be very demonstrative about it.
Right. It's always that fine line, though, of, you know, being too aggressive.
Oh, no. This is your survival. That's not too aggressive. What are they going to do? Say no? Or they're going to say Hasida's a bad girl. She's mean to me. She talked loud to me. Are they going to say that? Who are they going to say it to?
Right. I mean, the truth is, what I want to go into human resources, ideally, and no, unfortunately, no one in my family really has connections in that arena. That's
in why I missed that connections in what?
Human resources.
Well, that's like a, you know, an iffy job. Unless they own a big corporation and can put you into a job, how are you gonna deal with human resources? Don't they have a business? What kind of business do they have?
Most of them are like doctors, accountants, lawyers, typical.
Well, wait a minute. So that's not so bad. So you can't work for a doctor because then you're only going to be a file clerk, right? You can't work for a lawyer because they're going to hire a paralegal. That makes you only a file clerk. So actually, unless they own a business, there is no opportunity in the family, is there?
Yeah, that's true.
However, don't lawyers have clients?
Right.
And don't doctors treat patients? Think of the network of your family members and how extensive it may be. If you went to your lawyer, cousin, uncle, whatever he is, and say, I need a job. I need you to talk to your clients. I'm sure you could find something for me. Then you're going to open up a cornucopia of opportunity for yourself.
Okay, interesting.
All right, there it is. So lean on your family. That's what family is for. That's what family is for at the end of the day. That's what family is for. They're supposed to help a young person who's just starting out. That's the way it works. Okay. Here's a beautiful call coming up. Paul in Chicago, what's on your mind, Paul?
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for all you do.
Thank you.
I'm having a little problem coping with my mortality today because I see that Ann Margaret is turning 70.
I know what you mean. Whenever time I look at Brigitte Bardot, I don't know what to do to myself. Because when I was a young man, she was a sex goddess.
When I was a young man, I saw Ann Margaret perform in Vietnam. So now I'm having a problem. She's 70.
What do you mean? You were a troop?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and you saw her performing like that movie? What was that movie where they performed that Coppola did on the stage by the river?
She was in Vietnam with Bob Hope in 1968.
So what do you mean? You're really not feeling good about getting older because of that, or you're just pulling my leg?
Well, I'm just pulling your leg.
I see. But you're not doing badly for a 64-year-old, are you?
No, I'm not doing badly at all, but, you know, sort of a wake-up call to your mortality when you see someone like that turning 70, I think.
So what you do is you do 5 more push-ups a day, cut out the pasta, stop drinking beer, and get the Viagra and a toupee, and you'll be in business.
Thank you, doctor.
You know, Brigitte Bardot was such a stunningly beautiful girl, and you look what time and gravity did to that woman. It's frightening. I mean, I'm glad she's an animal rights activist. I like that part of her being. And I know she was one of the first people in Paris 20 years ago to talk about the Muslims taking over France and how they were converting the churches into mosques and blah, blah, blah. They charged her with a hate crime for that. She was a gutsy lady. Still is. But, you know, if ever a burqa was designed for someone, it was for the elder Brigitte Bardot.
Savage.